You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Lou Need, and today I have the honor of sitting with Daniel Amoduri. Daniel is a self-made multimillionaire, a full-time skeptic of conventional thought, and a proud father of three. He is the co-founder of the Future Money Trends newsletter and futuremoneytrends.com, which with nearly 150,000 subscribers, is the most widely recognized online authority in investment ideas and economic advice. He's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, on ABC World News Tonight, and on Russia TV Today. Daniel correctly predicted the collapse of Lehman Brothers, AIG, and Washington Mutual on Vision Victory, the YouTube channel he launched in 2007, which now has had more than 30 million views. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It is my pleasure. You actually warned your family and friends in 2007 about the coming market and mortgage collapse. And you started that YouTube channel because of it. You saw it coming. You had a vision before everyone else did.
I did. It's funny. I actually even named the YouTube channel Vision Victory, the original one. It's had, I think, over 13, 14 million views now. I haven't posted a video in quite some time, but it was because I got tired. I was one of those people in 2006, 2007, forwarding all these things to my friends and family, and nobody really cared. So my wife was like, hey, there's this new thing called YouTube, and why don't you try it? And that's how it all started. I started just because I was knocking on doors and buying foreclosure properties in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that the stack of papers for the defaults and the notice of foreclosures was just getting thicker and thicker and thicker. And that's when I made some predictions, because I did basic math too. It was just simply looking at the adjustables, when they would adjust and when the worst would be. And I saw that in basically 2008, it was really going to ramp up. And I figured it'd probably take 6 months, 7 months. So the funny thing about those predictions are I thought they were probably going to happen in July of 2008 or August. And I padded it. So I said between September of 2008 and February 2009. And of course, we all know Lehman Brothers filed bankruptcy in September. And that was it.
Yeah, you saw the bust. You had been in the field for a while. So you saw a trend that was very abnormal to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And another thing, you know, I would knock on these properties and more people weren't homeowners. They were renters. And I realized that, okay, now we've got a lot of people with homeowner loans, personal residence loans, but they've rented them out, and it just kept coming up. And there were some funny, interesting stories too. I mean, where I would see the same investors' names come up. And that's also where in my very first video, I predicted that Lehman Brothers would collapse. That was one of my first predictions. The video is still up. It was made on March 18, 2008. And again, simple, you know, the Federal Reserve and all these people have all this data. And here I am, just some kid knocking on doors for see if I can help people get out of foreclosure. And I saw Lehman Brothers on almost every sheet. And I was like, I think this company is going under, because how can you absorb all this Southern California real estate? And of course, I looked into other things as well, but I saw that they were right at the heart of this entire thing.
And in a short period of time, too. They moved quick.
Yeah. And, you know, the housing market is a very unfortunate situation. It was unsustainable, and it hurt a lot of people. And even though I was right about it, I actually lost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Because I thought that I had a little more time. So in 2007, I actually bought as many houses as I could to try to flip them. And I got caught in the downtrend, because even though it didn't implode until the fall of 2008, the price declines actually started in the middle of 2007, even February 2007, when Bear Stearns got taken over by J.P. Morgan. So, I mean, it started early on, and I ended up having a house that I listed for $1 million and ended up doing a short sale on it for $550,000.
Wow. Yeah. Lost a lot of money. Yeah. What made you so unique is, like, you noticed the bust, you noticed that this is happening, but you took upon yourself to actually help people, right? You didn't say, aha, I told you so, like, this is happening. During the mortgage crisis, you actually helped people buy put options.
I was teaching as many people as that would listen to buy countrywide put options in order to profit from them. Some people made a lot of money. I made decent money on them. And, you know, I also, from 2008, 2009, the YouTube channel was also helping people try to figure out what to do next. It was kind of like in the aftermath. Okay, where do we go from here? And that's where I think my journey started for my book, where, you know, I had kind of had to hit reset in my own life.
Mm-hmm. As you hit reset, you mentioned you had gotten into some bad bets with Southern California. You're currently living in La Jolla, very close to where I live, actually. But you had made a bad bet with Southern California's real estate market, which wiped out your entire income and savings, leaving you broke and your family and your wife just petrified of having to file bankruptcy during that time.
Yeah, the book actually, the first chapter and intro starts at a bankruptcy attorney's office. And it's basically, you know, I hope it helps people who are in, no matter what situation they're in. I mean, we were in a very bad place. We never filed bankruptcy. By the way, your listeners, there's the first chapter is free at futuremoneytrends.com/save. I should mention that. My PR person will kill me if I don't. So, but being in that bankruptcy attorney's office and seeing my wife crying next to me and just knowing that that was it, because I had always felt that I was destined to, you know, I was going to become wealthy. I was going to do what I wanted. I wanted to live my dreams. I hated school. I hated people telling me what to do. And I was like, this is my way to buy my freedom. And that was really where I had accepted defeat. Mm-hmm. And even though we didn't file bankruptcy that day, it still took me quite some time to dust myself off and pick myself up. And it really was through my wife's encouragement and her love that really kept me going, because honestly, she could have easily left. She was a school teacher making decent money. And here I was, just this blown out real estate investor who was, you know, depressed and sleeping in because I couldn't make any money. And, you know, it really was her love and encouragement that got the YouTube channel started as a hobby that ultimately became a very, very serious business that led to the newsletter that I built. And now it's a publishing company with six other newsletters. Mm-hmm. And it's all about personal finance. And it's actually what I love to do. When I was 13 years old, I used to go in Barnes & Noble and skip school because I wanted to read about economics and personal finance. So I ended up doing what I do. I was doing this for free for a long time before I ever got paid. So, you know, really it's in hindsight, I'm very thankful for everything that happened because it all turned into a gift. It all turned into exactly where I live today and how I am.
It turns out to a purpose because you had a vision, and it's recommended that you give your gift away for free, because if people will take it for free, then they're willing to pay for it later on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always tell my children or anybody who I'm talking with at the Future Money Trends letter that if you want to know what your purpose is, I don't know who told me this, but it was like, you know, there's a couple of things you can do. But one of them is you go to a bookstore and decide on what section of that bookstore can you sit there and read and just enjoy it all day. And that could give you some guidance. Another thing is many people have probably heard this one, but what are three things that you want to be said about you at your funeral? And I mean, what do you want people to say to you? Do you want them to say that you hated your job and you were miserable? Or what do you want them to say? Hey, this guy changed lives. This guy came and helped specific people or animals. Or he was an exceptional doctor. Or this person had a great business, you know, washing cars. And they always over-delivered. They always made sure everything was perfect. I mean, how do you want people to remember you? And by answering just those three questions, I bet you can find your life's purpose, because those three things you want to be remembered for are the three things you should be doing
and focusing on, because that's precisely what you did. And with you, you declared financial independence in 2012 because you focused on your passion for personal finance. And you were able to rebuild your wealth that way. And what I love about what you do is you have a unique niche. You have a unique way of going about it, because you don't focus on money, but by focusing on over-delivering value to your customers. And that makes you very unique. So tell us about that. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, that's very important. That's something I'm really instilling into my children. But ultimately, the equation of money is other people delivering value to people. And of course, the more people you deliver value to, the more money you can make, but also you can have fewer customers and just over-deliver. And I really believe that. I talk to new business owners all the time, and I always tell them, look, go out, find the best companies that can be your clients and give them your service for free. Mm-hmm. You want to over-deliver value for them because then you have a great reference. And that goes for your paying customers too. My children all own stocks, but I have them buy stocks that they can relate to, but also are great teachers. Companies like Walt Disney and Costco. Those are two companies that over-deliver for you every time you go in. I mean, what other grocery store can anybody here listening to this show go into and walk out feeling great like you do when you go to Costco? They'll even feed you while you're there if you go on Sunday or Saturday. And the same thing for Disney. You know, if my kids are watching cartoons, and I know a lot of other parents can relate to this, you might be interested in what kind of cartoons they're watching. But if you see that Mickey or Disney brand, you're like, okay, I feel pretty good. I know Disney's not going to do anything crazy to my children or when you go to their parks. You know, everybody's been to Knott's Berry Farm and Magic Mountain. The simple fact is they're just simply not as clean. You don't get the service. The people aren't as happy. So I want my children, I want my life, I want my letter, I want everybody who reads this book to really understand that if you want to make money, you do have to over-deliver value to other people. It's a simple equation a lot of people don't get because schools muck it up. And I really want to, you know, that's one thing I want to do for people is over-deliver. So, you know, every day when I wake up, I mean, I'm very focused on helping the people who read this letter because I did it. And I feel like I did it and I'm not that smart. I always tell people, I'm like, I'm not, you know, some rocket scientist here. I did it following some very basic steps. And if you'll just apply those, I have no doubt that people can be financially independent within 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Earl Nightingale says, success is on the other side of service to others and delivering value. If you want to make $1 million, add value, serve 1 million people. Add more value in that way. And now I know you're teaching your kids to buy stocks in companies that are that has great values that add to the substance in life and that are clean. How about other people? How would they know when it's time to buy a stock?
You know, when it comes to buying a stock, first of all, I would say this to anybody. Are you a stock investor? Do you understand it? A lot of people kind of just throw money at the stock market blindly in a mutual fund or 401k. But if you look at what these stocks are, they're actual businesses. So you really need to take into account that you're buying a business. So when to buy a stock is the same thing when to buy a great business. Is it undervalued? You know, what's it worth? I mean, you wouldn't buy a home for $1 million if it's worth $200,000 in Victorville. You just wouldn't do it. But many people do that in the stock market. So I think making sure you self-educate yourself, learn about stocks, maybe practice. There's nothing wrong with practicing with no money involved. But for me personally, I buy stocks that pay a dividend. I'm relentless when it comes to finding companies that pay me money. I want checks in the mail. I think multiple streams of income is one of the best things you can do outside of having no debt to give yourself financial peace and security and not live in that scarcity mindset. So when it comes to buying stocks, I try to find a stock that's absolutely going to share in the profits and is trading at a good value. Disney, for example, if they're going to make, let's say $20 billion in revenue, I'm willing to pay. I know that the market participants are willing to pay a certain multiple on that number. So it's each investor, you know, it can have a very specific reason to buy or sell a stock. Some are trading them over the day, some are buying them for the next 50 years. But I think if you're going to buy a stock, before you do that, you need to make sure you fully understand that you're buying a fractional share of an actual business.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you talk about passive income is the key to your financial freedom now and later. Tell us a little bit about how you have purchased all of your real estate investment with only seller financing for the past decade.
Yeah. So after the 2008 crisis, my credit was ruined. We had credit cards that defaulted. We had foreclosures and I never went back to repair it. I paid off and settled off the credit cards. But with the foreclosures on there, I just never did anything. So to this day, I actually don't know what my credit is. Who knows? I might have decent credit. I might have a 500. I have no idea. But in order to rebuild and to invest, I had to be able to purchase homes. So I started doing seller financing, and it's so funny. Most people will tell you there's no such thing. It doesn't exist. It's from the 1970s in the south of the United States. But I have done seller finance deals in California and all throughout the United States. And the seller finance deals for a fourplex or higher is very common, actually. You'd be surprised. For land, it's extremely common, even though I've never purchased land, don't recommend it. But for single family homes, it is a little trickier in the sense that there are not that many realtors that are even aware of it. So you actually have to find the smart realtors first. And I really say that because there is seller financing going on in every city. But I guarantee you 99% of the realtors have no idea. They're just, you know, salespeople trying to make a living. Great. You really have to find those realtors who are passionate about business, passionate about delivering value, and have to find solutions. Because what being an entrepreneur is you hit a wall and you find a way around it or through it. And so you need to find those realtors that say, hey, I've got all these people with bad credit, but they have some money and they want to buy houses. How am I going to find a solution? For a lot of realtors, that's where it ends. But for some, they will find and stumble across seller finance deals. So most of the seller finance deals I do are in the state of Texas, and it's for a specific reason. I stumbled across a problem that some houses have, a foundation issue. It happened when I purchased my own home. I found out it's not an expensive problem. I thought it was a $50,000 problem. Turns out it's like a $3,000 to $5,000 problem to fix a foundation. So what I do is I look for houses with foundation problems, mm-hmm. and sellers who are distressed, who need to get out of the situation. So what I simply do is I make sure they get paid. I have them assign the property to me. So I pay their mortgage, but the deed is mine. So I own the house now, and I fix it up and then I sell it. So the property is, restored to normal order as far as having a new buyer come in with their own loan or a cash buyer come in. So, and that's what I've been doing for the last 11 years now, actually. So if I'm buying single families, I'm targeting specific type of sellers who are distressed or who have a property that is under distress. And then on anything that's a fourplex or a 10-plex or anything that's in bigger, you'll find that the seller financing is a lot more common, actually.
Mm-hmm. So you're making the dollars that you save, create new dollars, make more money for you, making your money work for you.
Absolutely. It's extremely important to do that. And I tell people to actually spend it. In the beginning, if you make $50 a month in passive income, I would encourage you to use that to pay a bill, pay the water bill, buy yourself a dinner. You want to condition yourself to truly understand that this is real money. You know, a lot of times when dividends come in, they just automatically buy more stock. That's kind of the normal status quo for retirement savers. And what I want to teach people is, look, this is real money. You can enjoy this with your life right now. And sure, I want to buy more income too. And I don't recommend doing that nonstop, but I really want people to understand that, look, when there is an easy way being an investor to have 10, 20, 30, 40 ways of making money, and the checks come in every month, every week.
Hmm. And the whole retirement thing is, you're saying it's outdated. It's a scam, and millennials are questioning whether it will be around when we're ready to retire as early 30s. I'm in my early 30s and thinking Social Security is not going to be a thing when I'm ready to retire later on in life. Why do you believe retirement is a scam?
I think it's an experiment that failed, and it's probably a scam for anybody who tries to embrace it at this point. But for look at the person who took the first Social Security check. She put in, I think, $28, and she pulled out about $60,000 out of it. $28 in, $60,000 out. So you can see that the first retirees, it really worked. The experiment was working great. There was pension systems and with our employers, but today's employee has become very, very difficult for employers because of now they're responsible for their retirement. Now they're responsible for their healthcare. They're responsible for workers' compensation. They're responsible for all these things. And then, of course, if anything happens to the employee, it's on the employer. So I think this trend of freelancers and independent contractors, and not having the 30-year career, I don't think that's going to change at all. But what hasn't changed is the school system and the way we train people. And so people are still training for a 1950s, 60s, 70s economy. And investors are investing as if they're investing for a 1970s, 80s, 90s portfolio.
Yep.
And just things have dramatically changed. And opportunities have changed as well for millennials. We're very blessed to actually be able to work from home, so many of us, because of the internet. And start businesses so easy because of GoDaddy. We can start a business for $10,
right,
just buy a domain. So I really encourage people to really rethink this whole thing. First of all, retirement hasn't been around that long. 401ks since the 80s. A lot of us were born when the 401k started. Yet we treat the 401k and this idea of conventional retirement as if Adam and Eve came out with their compensation plans. So I think A better way to do it is the way the rich do it, which is they focus on sustainable living, which is not having excessive spending, excessive lifestyle financed, and they have investments that cash flow. They really relentlessly focus on buying assets that make them money. It's a simple strategy. It's been proven for thousands of years, yet somehow the middle class has been sidetracked by storing our wealth in tax penalty spaces where we can't get our money out without paying a penalty. We're big speculators. I mean, let's be real. Not only are we buying stocks if we follow the typical retirement plan, but you don't even know what your tax rate's going to be. Tax rates are about the lowest they've been in the past 100 years. Mm-hmm. And you have to ask yourself, when you retire in 20 or 30 years, are taxes going to be higher or lower? I'm pretty confident they're going to be higher. So why would we defer paying the lowest tax in 100 years to speculate that we will pay a lower or equal tax in 20 or 30 years when we have no idea what the conditions of the country will be? But I can tell you this, with $20 trillion in debt and going higher, I assure you taxes will be higher. Mm-hmm. So why not lock in the lowest tax instead of deferring it? So I just think the current retirement planning is going to fall short, as it's falling short for the baby boomers. And lastly on this, because I know I can go on forever about this, if it didn't work out for the baby boomers that well, who literally had it on a silver platter with the stock market going from, you know, the Dow went from 800 to where it is today, as well as, you know, 30-year bull market in bonds or 35-year bull market in bonds. Look at what happened to housing. If they couldn't do it successfully, how in the world is a generation where things are changing and many, many things are plateauing, how are they going to do it? So I think people need to focus on buying cash flow and living different lives than the baby boomers.
I agree, because we are in the era of knowledge. It's in the internet era, and it's a lot easier now to, like you said, to start a new business, to become your own boss, to actually dictate how much money you make, and you don't have to depend on the government to rescue you or bail you out later on in life.
Absolutely.
It's a perfect opportunity. Now, I know your book is Don't Save for Retirement, and you do have quite a bit to go on about retirement. What are the big takeaways from your book? And we will put the link down below on the show notes for listeners to be able to find a copy. But what are the, tell us the big takeaways from your book, Don't Save for Retirement.
You know, with Don't Save Retirement, I want people to kind of hit reset. Like, we all kind of are born into this world and we're conditioned from a very young age on what to believe, what to think. And I just kind of want everybody to take a step back and say, okay, what do you really want? What makes you happy? What is your purpose in life? And how are you going to be able to fulfill yourself and fulfill your own life's purpose by doing what you want to do ultimately? And I know that it's a saying to say that money doesn't buy happiness, and it doesn't technically, but it does buy freedom.
It gives you options. And it buys you options.
It does. And so you want to be financially educated. You have to become an investor. You want to become an investor. It's something they don't teach in schools at all. They don't teach anything about money either. So I really talk about the safer investments, because the strategies of the middle class and poor is to try to get rich overnight. The strategies of the rich are to preserve and grow with income. And if you look at like Warren Buffett, he says the number one rule is don't lose money. The number two rule is don't forget about the number one rule. So what I offer up in the book is some very safe investments that the wealthy have been using for literally hundreds of years. And they're not even offered to the middle class, which really bothered me when I discovered them for myself. And now I share them in my newsletter, Future Money Trends, and now it's in the book, Don't Save for Retirement. And I really hope it gets out there, because there are things and vehicles that the wealthy have used that are fully available to everybody, but we're just not taught about them, because we're taught to sock your money away for 30 to 40 years. And if it all works out, you'll be able to quit your job at 65 and live happily ever after. But why not apply the strategy? So that I have that in there. And then the most important part of the book, I think a lot of people relate to and that I love sharing, is my personal story. It's about how I was in a bankruptcy attorney's office and then climbed my way out. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I did some extreme things. There's a chapter in the book that talks about extreme cutting, and it's not what you'll find when you Google search and somebody tells you, oh, switch your checking account or save interest on a credit card bill or, you know, reduce your cable bill. These are extreme things that my wife and I did. The biggest saving expense people can do is moving. A lot of people hate to hear that, but it's true. Even 20 or 30 minutes away from where you live now, you might be able to save money. Or if you can move another state, you might be able to save 50%.
Yeah.
We did things that I'm not popular for, but we got rid of our pets who had medical conditions. It seems heartless, but you know what? We had an infant, mm-hmm. and we had a baby, and we needed to save money. And I was like, I looked for everywhere to cut. And so I put every idea I could think of, and I'm talking about cutting down to the marrow. Because yeah. And it's not a permanent situation. But if you can temporarily cut back and start focusing on buying other things that are producing money, now all of a sudden, instead of having one or two incomes in the household, you might have eight or nine.
Multiple streams of passive income flowing in. And these are great success tips, because we believe success leaves clues. It leaves a trail. There are habits that have already been put in place that help you be so successful. So I'm curious, what are some key habits that help you in your daily life?
You know, the number one habit is there's always a solution. One thing I've trained and conditioned my brain is that there is no problem. So whenever there's bad news, I have no reaction. I have conditioned my brain to know that there's always a solution to everything. So I'm always laser focused on finding solutions. Another habit is focusing on the task at hand. So every night before I go to bed, I write down what I want to achieve, and I focus on that first in the morning. Mm-hmm. I make sure that I don't get bogged down with replying to emails or text messages or everyone else's concerns. Yes, I want to help them, and I will. But for the first hour to 2 hours, I always make sure, what do I need to achieve today? What's most important? And oftentimes, it might be something that I need to achieve for another person, like a client. So I might be focused on that. But I just want to make sure that my priorities are straight. Too many of us have released our sense of priorities and sense of what we need to take care of to somebody else, whether it's the government or our boss, or society. Don't fall into societal demands or peer pressure. Focus on what you need to do. And the other habit that I would say that I've really focused on is just being grateful every day. I always start off the day with thinking about what I'm thankful for about 10 minutes. If I could send you pictures of my office, it has all these things written all over it about what I'm thankful for. I even do daily statements with my children. I'm trying to pass on this habit. They have a daily statement written on their bathroom mirror. So every day when they brush their teeth in the morning, they read about all the things that they're grateful for and the things they're thankful for.
Yeah, affirmations and attitude of gratitude. It's a way of breeding and bringing that more and more of it to your life. I love that you teach your kids that so early on.
Yeah.
How can we connect with you? How can we find out about your book? What are your socials? Please let us know.
I would love for your listeners to go to futuremoneytrends.com/save. It's got the first chapter and the introduction of the book. And it also will give you a free weekly wealth digest. I'll never ask for a credit card. I'll never ask for anything. It's simply different stories that my wife and I went through when we were building our own wealth, and also updates on any current investment or ideas that we're involved in personally. So please check out futuremoneytrends.com/save. And if you want, you can also hit the contact us page there. And I'd love to be in communication with anybody who is looking for any kind of guidance or help.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Well, all right, morning enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.